sure.
Mr. Taylor, UNDP has been working in Belarus for more than 25 years, and since that time, a lot of projects have been implemented in the country in different spheres, from minimizing the consequences of Chernobyl catastrophe to the sustainable development. And what are the priority spheres the UNDP is concentrating on nowadays?
Thanks for the question, and it's a pleasure to be here talking with you today. So, as you rightly point out, we have a long history of working in Belarus, working on some of the development issues which I think have been of primary concern to this country as it's grown from a position of a recently independent country to a position of a country which is a middle income country, which is a country firmly anchored to the east and to the west, and dealing with many of the same development problems which many other countries, European countries, Eurasian countries deal with. So the first thing I would say is that whilst, yes, we've worked extensively in the past on the Chernobyl project, as you rightly point out, and this indeed is an area of great pride for us that we were able to assist the country at such a tragic time. But of course, a new set of challenges is now with us. And these challenges, I think, they're most acute when it comes to climate change and climate change adaptability. And Belarus has taken really enormous strides, I think, in terms of preserving its natural spaces, in terms of making sure that its economy is going towards carbon neutrality, that the technologies that the country uses are increasingly not harmful for the environment. Clearly more needs to take place over the coming years and decades, but I certainly believe that UNDP will be playing, hope UNDP will be playing a very strong role in supporting Belarus's policy of having an economy that is working towards climate neutrality and that is adaptable for whatever changes will come. Another really key area for the country is building, I think, on its very impressive track record of social inclusion, mm-hmm. And equality. As you know, Belarus is really one of the most equal countries in the world in terms of the Gini coefficient. And for me personally, this is this makes it a very nice country to live in, a country where everyone has a stake. And this is, to be honest, this is an increasingly rare thing. Many countries that have gone through transitions have gone through transitions rapidly and really created a privileged elite and what we call the losers of development, mm-hmm. The underskilled, the unmobile, those who are involved in vocations that are increasingly redundant in a modern linked economy. So this is not the case in Belarus. And as we look forward, I certainly hope and believe that UNDP will be supporting Belarus in ensuring that it can continue having a very strong social compact, whilst at the same time adapting to new economic realities, making sure that, for example, small towns are not just places of hopelessness, but are also places of birth and rebirth, new innovation, new technology. These things are mm-hmm. already beginning to happen. And again, I believe and hope that UNDP will continue to play a very important role in this regard. Perhaps one last area, if I could. There are many more, but I would say these are the three which I feel are most important. It's about away from the economic dimension. It's also about ensuring that the work that we support is also inclusive in terms of who we work with. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proud that the organization I work for is able to work across government, civil society, and the business sector. And this gives us a unique, I think, ability to support change in a way which sometimes brings together an unusual coalition of actors. And I think that is precisely the type of unusual coalitions that you need sometimes to make positive social change, or to tackle a difficult issue like accessibility, or like modernizing certain sectors of the economy. So I do believe that this is also one of the ways that we will continue to have an impact in this country.
Our country almost fulfilled all their Millennium Development Goals before deadline. And how the country is positioned in terms of for achieving Sustainable Development Goals?
So as you rightly point out, Belarus is rightly proud of its track record on the Millennium Development Goals, now replaced by the Sustainable Development Goals, which are more ambitious. Way more ambitious in terms of some of the costings that have been made for how much it would cost for countries to achieve these. They run it into the tens of trillions per year, really enormous amounts of money. So I think for that, because of the scale and ambition, what is necessary is a process whereby the country focuses on those what we are calling accelerators, those particular sustainable development goals, where both there is political will to make progress as soon as possible, and where there is also capacity to do so. And this, for every country, this will be different. And what UNDP, along with other UN agencies, will be doing is supporting the government and actors, other actors, in that regard. So take, for example, discussing climate change. If, for example, climate change adaptability is an issue where this country feels, or energy efficiency feels, it is particularly important to make progress, then what will need to be done is a costing of that progress. Benchmarks will need to be set. It's sometimes a bit bureaucratic, to be honest, but this is the nature of the game. And then we will get to work over a course of years. This is generational change, basically, and progress will be made. And I'm sure that the same type of success which we saw in terms of MDG achievement in Belarus will be borne out with the Sustainable Development Goals as well, because this is a country, in my limited time in this country, I've noticed this is a country where when a decision is made, action takes place. And that is a very good thing for development. Mm-hmm. And this is also something which takes long-term commitment. And again, I think Belarus has a track record of delivering on long-term priorities.
UNDP has launched two big campaigns, I mean Bike for SDGs and Mind Over Matter, which aimed at supporting SDGs and also to raise awareness of people with disabilities. And mm-hmm. what is very important, it was possible for UNDP officials to meet with families who have children with disabilities, and also with people with disabilities, mental disabilities. How effective were these campaigns and were? How could you assess this?
These two events are not just one-offs, they're really flagship events which are part of a much longer and larger process focusing on inclusivity, as you point out, focusing on social justice, focusing on people with disabilities, and ensuring that those people are a full and visible part of our society. And I think the utility of these events is that it really forces us all out of our comfort zone. So many diplomats and bureaucrats, and I believe also government officials, rarely leave their offices, the capital city, rarely get outside into the nature and also into the small villages and towns. And I think once you do that, then you see that, you're not just talking about numbers, you're talking about people and challenges and problems they face, and sometimes a sense of hopelessness because of a condition, or even worse, in a way, the society's view on that condition. And I think this is about behavioral change. And behavioral change takes time. And every society undergoes this behavioral change. And sometimes it's quick and sometimes it's slow. I see, you know, the situation with people with disabilities in Belarus as actually relatively benign compared to many of the countries in the region. And you see people with disabilities out and about. You see increasing numbers of accessible places. But much more needs to be done. And I think both whether focus on healthy lifestyles, which was the easy and visible takeaway from the two bike rides, or the more complex one, which is about people with disabilities and also mental disabilities. These are very sensitive issues, and they're issues which, as I said, it's I think useful to us all to get out of our everyday comfort zone and put ourselves into situations where we're interacting with real people and not just numbers and figures. I think that's how change is made, both at the human level, obviously, but I think also importantly at the policy level.
You arrived in Belarus in February, and as you described, you're in the country for quite a limited time, but in general you have a lot of meetings, you visited different regions, talked to many people in the country. Has your impressions of the country changed since what you knew about Belarus before coming here?
Yeah, I love this question because it gives me the opportunity to talk a bit about the outside world view of this country, which I think sometimes depends on where you're looking, but sometimes doesn't do justice to this country. So my impressions of Belarus were informed by two short visits, or three maybe, 2012 and 2014-15. I saw a place which was, I think, far more open and inviting than I had been led to believe by some of the, frankly speaking, some of the propaganda which is circulated in I think all media. You know, we are all subject to propaganda, and I think recognizing that is a crucial part of understanding, you know, making your own decisions about places and things and issues. So what I discovered was that, you know, this country, which far more dynamic, far more open, far warmer, far more hospitable, far more dynamic than I had been led to believe. And I think the fact that it is still, unfortunately, visited by so few international tourists from the West is a bit of a problem in terms of having other countries fully understand this Belarus. You know, clearly a number of countries to the east have a much longer understanding of Belarus, but my impressions certainly have been very positive. I've travelled to every oblast. I've visited many parks and lakes. You know, the wildlife, the small towns, the villages, all of these parts of the traditional fabric of Belarus, I think, are not visible to many foreigners who maybe if they come to Minsk, businessmen, for example, they come to Minsk, they don't often leave the hotel or the conference room, and then they go back. And this is a great shame. This is why I'm going to be working very hard to support tourism, a stronger focus on tourism in this country, because I believe it has tremendous potential, really, to go from the least visited country in Europe to a country visited by many people from many different places, from the Gulf, from Russia, from Western Europe, from China. You have these links now to the world, and tourists are really desperate to learn about other places. So, in general, I've had a very nice first 6 months here, and I'm looking forward to the next.
Not long ago, the Times newspaper called Minsk the best place to spend weekends with less expenses. So our country is trying to do its best to advertise its tourist potential, and infrastructure is being developed, and also we are trying to advertise the country's potential. But what, in your opinion, should be done in this field to attract foreign tourists?
Really, a lot more could be done. I see some very positive moves and words from your government, and I see some very dynamic actors in the sector. Some businesses, tourism association, all have ambitious plans. But I think what is, frankly speaking, what is lacking is a concerted effort to promote Belarus coherently abroad, and to do so with a sort of differentiation between the markets, because the markets are very different. Between, for example, visitors from the Russian Federation who come mainly to visit the sanatoriums, some of the nightlife attractions in Minsk, some to the nature, of course, as well, and then the Western European visitors who are coming more exclusively for nature, for bird watching, for other, let me say, rural ecotourism pursuits. These are very lucrative markets for Belarus, and they could be, in my view, they could be better tapped in terms, and they could be better presented abroad. I'm very interested in working with Belarus's neighbours, the Baltics, Poland, but also its near neighbours, the Russian Federation, and countries in Central Europe, to look at some of the tourism models that, for example, countries like Austria or countries like Estonia have pursued. I mean, some of these countries, for example, Austria, where I previously lived, they have extremely well-developed canton or provincial tourism brands. So Innsbruck or Tyrol, they have their own brands, and they've been extremely successful at attracting tourism from all over Europe and all over the world. I believe Belarus can do the same thing. What Grodno has to offer is very different from what Minsk has to offer, is very different from what Vitebsk has to offer. So we need to think through how to actually package these offers with some people who have done this in really big markets. I'm going to be working as hard as I can to do that with our partners. Of course, the other side of this is making sure that infrastructure is there. So we need to have tourism infrastructure all over the country, basic things as well. You know, the road network here is very good. The rail network here is pretty good. But the access to public toilets, for example, is not great. And if you have a lot of tourists coming, they need public toilets. And it's, you know, maybe it's not a polite thing to say, but it's an important thing for part of the general impression that tourists, visitors to this country, take away from Belarus after a visit. And also to make sure it's not just one-time visitors, because many countries, I won't name them, but many countries have made the mistake of marketing themselves essentially for one-time visit. And it's a big mistake, because the most lucrative form of tourism, it comes from visitors who come back year after year after year.
Return visits.
Return visits, as they call it
in the tourist sphere.
Yeah. Minsk, it reminds me a lot of Belgrade in Serbia, where I used to live. And Belgrade is one of the hotspots now for tourism, for urban tourism in Europe. And I think Minsk could take elements of what Belgrade has developed. And all of the 3, 4, and 5-star hotels you see could be at 100% occupancy, and some of the small ones too.
In April, Mr. Steiner was appointed as a UNDP administrator, and he's supposed to bring new initiative to the organization, taking into account his managerial experience. So do you see any changes in the work of UNDP office here in Belarus in this regard? Or maybe you plan some changes?
Well, this is a bit above my pay grade, I have to say. So I'm not sure how the appointment of the new Undersecretary General, the new administrator of UNDP, will directly impact this office. But you're right to say that he has a reputation not only for being a passionate environmentalist, which again I think is something that he will have in common with the new permanent representative to the UN from Belarus, Mr. Rybakov. He's also, as you point out, he's a manager, and he's I think he has a reputation for being a very good and fair manager. So I hope and I believe that the organization will benefit from that, and that our own presence here in Belarus will be efficient, will be equipped to support the government and civil society for years to come in a composition which makes sense for us and which is good for the country.
So thank you very much, Mr. Taylor, for this frank interview. We'll hope to see you again to discuss UNDP activity on our radio.
Thank you very much indeed.